We're having a heat wave, a tropical heat wave.
Well, it won't be a tropical heat wave exactly, but we will feel a little more spring-like today. And we will find out what the weather models are saying about the weather this week and the outlook for this spring. And we will welcome your weather-related questions for our guest expert. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, March 10th. We will also review the winter that was. Meteorological winter ended when March began. Is this winter from heck finally over? How much longer will our snow and ice stick around? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guest. Very happy to have with us Michael Morgan, Professor of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. He's also Division Director for the Atmospheric and Geospace Sciences at the National Science Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Good to have you with us again. So the high temperatures in Wisconsin today are supposed to be near 50 degrees. So have we seen the end of bitter cold temperatures?
I think perhaps the coldest part of winter, I think almost certainly, is behind us, but it looks like we're going to still be below normal. After this brief warm-up, we're going to be below normal for a while, but I think generally a moderating trend in temperatures is expected.
Well, that's somewhat good news, but what is normal this time of year?
Right, normal this time of year, high temperatures in the middle to upper 30s. And so with a high temperature of 50 degrees expected today by the National Weather Service, that really puts us well above normal for the first time in quite a while. And for the month, the average temperatures for much of southern Wisconsin are between 40 and 42. And then you go to the northern part of the state, the upper 30s to low 40s. So the next couple days, relatively mild, at least today, relatively mild, cooling off, and then maybe close to normal for to close out the week. But yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So a little bit above normal now. Normal, I guess, after that. But we probably, at least for the longer range forecasts, what kind of a spring is it going to be? Is it sometimes we know if it's going to be above or below normal temps or precipitation?
Right. So for the, just to close things out, for the next 6 to 10 days, the official forecast from the Climate Prediction Center for the area is for temperatures below normal, very likely below normal, with maybe above normal precipitation in the northern part of the state and a bit below normal precipitation for the southern part of the state. And then going out for another, beyond that, 10 to 14 days, cold broadly overall, below normal temperatures, and above normal precipitation. When you look at the spring outlook, the forecast is for continued below normal temperatures for the upper Great Lakes region, for the Great Lakes of the United States. And for precipitation, I think it's expected to be relatively close to normal.
Mm-hmm. So this means that we might have some more snow.
Yes, I think that's that's quite likely. And in fact, even with a warm-up today and some rain tomorrow, we'll be turning back over to snow. I think we have another shot at some snow early next week as well.
Has this been the worst winter ever?
No, I think it certainly rivals. I think the last time we had anything comparable was probably in the mid-90s, winter of 95, 96, when we had, I think it was a 100-hour period of below zero temperatures. But I think for the Great Lakes region, I mean, this has certainly been one of the coldest winters in quite some time. I mean, it's just the reporting just a few moments ago during the news section talking about the Great Lakes and the ice cover there. I think we're pretty close to rivaling the ice cover that was seen on the Great Lakes to this extent, I think over 93% or so, back in the late 1970s. I think it was the winter of 78, 79.
Yeah,
so it hasn't been. This is sort of cold that people that are sort of a bit older in the population probably have experienced winters like this in the past, but nothing in recent history.
Right. I do remember that the late 70s winter, but I don't know, maybe in my age I've you block some of that out. The ice cover on the Great Lakes, I did see a map that showed Lake Michigan in particular had broken a record, that it had never been as frozen over, I believe. The actual ice cover on Lake Michigan was the worst ever.
Right. I believe that's it succeeded over, certainly over 90%. I'm not sure how much further it's gotten in terms of its cover, but looking at all the Great Lakes, I mean, it's peaked at above 90% for all the lakes, which is a modern record, which, according to our state climatologist, has only occurred only a few times in the past 100 years. So,
yeah,
it was a remarkable winter.
So, why was the winter so remarkable? What was it that caused the weather that we experienced?
Well, as we've had these conversations in the past, it's a tricky thing to identify, but I think one of the factors has been, and this is whether it's a symptom or a factor or a cause, it's still something that has to be teased out. But over the last year or so, over the northern part of the Pacific Ocean in the upper atmosphere, it's been well above normal temperature-wise. And what that creates, the sort of, if you will, bubble of warmer air over there, creates a ridge of high pressure. It's a large anticyclonic circulation, clockwise circulation centered over the North Pacific. And having a circulation like that in the North Pacific, that diverts the storm track, the jet stream, well to the north over parts of Alaska, and then as the jet continues toward the east, it's on a directed toward the south, and that basically directs cooler temperatures from over Canada over the eastern part of the United States, and central and eastern part of the United States. And so that persistent northwesterly flow that we've been in has been responsible for both the cold air that we've had here, but also driving those small Alberta Quipper-like systems that bring us periods of light snow, what we've seen many times this winter. So it's attributed to this warming over the northern Pacific, I think at least in part. That's part of the circulation change that we've seen, and that has consequences downstream, like this northwest flow that brings the cold air in. And so just as we go deeper into the winter, that cold air persists. Snowpack deepens over northern Canada, and that just keeps the a fresh reservoir of cold air in place for us to stay below normal.
We are talking about our weather with Michael Morgan, who is a professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison, is also with the National Science Foundation. And we're welcoming your questions for him, your weather-related questions, your climate-related questions as well. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So, have you had enough of this winter? Are you ready for spring? We are going to have a very spring-like day today. But, as we just heard, winter's not over yet. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Spring fever. Spring is here at last.
Spring isn't here at last, but it feels like it's here today anyway. We are talking about our weather and our climate, and we're welcoming your questions. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest weather expert is talking about why this winter just hasn't seemed to want to end, and what we can look forward to as spring approaches. And we're welcoming again your questions and your reactions to this winter and the coming spring. Michael Morgan is our guest. He is a professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison. Let's take some calls. We have Dan in Drummond with us first. Hello, Dan.
Hello. What I want to say, my comment is that this, what we've had for the last 29 years has been above normal, and this, what we've had this winter was a very, very normal winter.
Oh, does Dan have that right, Professor Morgan?
I would say that for Wisconsin, I can speak certainly for southern Wisconsin in particular. I mean, the temperatures compared with our 30-year climatological average this winter were below normal. If you look at a much longer history climate record, you know, this might place it more, as I mentioned earlier, in a more something more characteristic of winters that people may have experienced in the past. But based on our 30-year climatology, this was a below-normal winter for the Madison area.
Mm-hmm.
But an interesting thing, just to note, I mean, we talked about the warmth over the North Pacific. Parts of Alaska, Western Canada were well above normal this winter. And in fact, if you look at the entire globally average temperature, both land and ocean, this past January was the warmest since 2007 and the fourth warmest for January. And it was above the 20th century average. So this was globally, it was warm, much warmer than normal. I'll just say warmer than normal, I'll say that. And just locally, again, over the eastern United States, central and eastern United States, below normal temperatures.
So help us understand that. So the world is warmer, our climate is warmer, but this particular winter was colder?
Right. This particular winter over the central and eastern United States was colder. But if you look around the globe, again, and over Alaska, over parts of Western Canada, above normal temperatures,
mm-hmm.
And you can go down the southern hemisphere and also see in Australia, I mean, obviously it's their spring and summer, or their summer rather, and fall, they've had above normal temperatures down there as well. So it's just a local pocket of really cold air here over the eastern and central part of the United States, as well as parts of Russia. But if you go over to Europe, it was Spain experienced its warmest January since 1996 and the third warmest since they began keeping national records in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
So we just happen to be in the unfortunate pocket of cold air over the globe.
Yeah. So Dan, what's your reaction to that? It is below normal.
The thing is, maybe that is for you people, but I've lived all my life up in northern Wisconsin. And this is more of a normal winter for northern Wisconsin than what we've had in the last 30 years.
All right. So maybe in the last 30 years, he thinks it's been pretty toasty, Professor Morgan. And this one, now we're going back to the winters that he remembers post 30 years ago.
Right. I think that certainly is the case. I'm just, as I'm talking with you, just mm-hmm. picking up some... trying to see if I can get some climatological data to verify Dan's mm-hmm. statement, and just take just a moment. I'll have something to look at the temperature record for this winter. And it really, if you look at this is looking at a average temperature. When we talk about below or above normal, below normal, we're talking about with respect to a 30-year average from 1971 to 2000. And as an example for Wausau, I can't place Drummond just right now, but for Wausau as an example, northern part of the state where I can look at some of these records. During January and February, yeah, actually we're slightly above normal to normal, and then in the last few weeks, certainly from mid-February until now, we've been well below normal. So, again, for different parts of the state, maybe slight variations in the temperature, maybe closer to normal, if you will, in the January, early February time frame, but certainly in the last few weeks, it's been well below normal.
Mm-hmm.
Daytime highs in Wausau, as an example, at least through late February, early March, were actually not even reaching the average minimum temperatures we'd expect for that period.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Doug and Toma wants to know how accurate the history of weather reporting is. For example, in the late 1800s, when we saw all sorts of records set, how do we know they were accurate? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right. So we have records that go back in different parts of the country for well back into the last century, or even a couple centuries back into the 1800s. And obviously, when you compare those records with modern-day records, one of the big questions you have to ask is, do they have the temperatures right? I mean, some of these, obviously the sensing technology that we use has changed and has improved. And when you see lots of records that have been set back in the 1800s, some of those were some of the earliest temperature records for some of those sites. I can't be specific about, obviously, individual sites, but I'd certainly say that our temperature sensing technologies, haven't changed a lot in terms of our thermometers that we use and things of that sort. Just how well calibrated they were and were they kept to the same standards that we have today? Probably not. The sighting of temperature, sighting of sensors is also a very key thing in terms of getting an accurate temperature record. You don't want sensors that have been previously in very rural environments, and then as the cities have grown up around them, that heat island effect certainly can play an influence to the temperature. People have now been working, as we've been trying to establish a much longer-term climate record, have been trying to tease out what parts due to the urbanization of particular sites and take that out so that you can get a much cleaner climate record. But I'd say the sensing technology, for temperatures specifically, hasn't changed a heck of a lot in terms of the types of thermometers that are being used, but I think the standards certainly have changed about where you site the instruments and making sure that the level of accuracy is precise.
Let's go to Pat in Watertown now. Hello, Pat.
Good morning.
Morning.
I received my newspaper from Northern Wisconsin. It's published out of Hurley, called the Iron County Miner Newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
In there, it states that from December 7th through 7:30 on the morning of March 5th, they had 62 days below zero.
That's too many.
Yeah, well, that's they're trying to figure out now how to fit the school kids in yet. They've had to, of course, they've lost all their days that are worked into the school schedule for snow. And in some cases, it wasn't snow up there this year. It was the temperature below zero where they didn't have the kids come out.
Yeah, that's right. So that sounds like a lot to me. Of course, I don't know what that compares to in the past, but 62 days
below zero.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is not below 32 degrees. This is below zero.
Fahrenheit.
Yes.
Well, that's impressive. How did you fare with that?
How did I feel with
that?
No, you have a summer place up there, Pat?
No, that's where I'm from.
Oh, I see.
And so I still get the newspaper. And how did I feel about that?
How did you fare with that cold?
I'm glad I'm down here.
Right, that's it. She's in Watertown. That's why.
Okay. Sorry, missed that.
They've also had 138 inches of snow.
Wow. I mean, do you have any idea? Ironwood is way up on the border, Professor Morgan, in northern Wisconsin. That sounds like a very cold, very very cold winter, and 138 inches of snow.
Right, I'm trying to see if I can quickly get a record for the what their normal the snowfall is in that area, but it's very likely above normal. I mean, one of the things, characteristics of snow, this is kind of an interesting fact about snow this winter. If you look at the record, certainly for the southern part of the state in Madison, we've had actually below normal precipitation this winter, below normal precipitation since the precipitation season when they recorded from late October through now, has actually been below normal, but the snowfall has been above normal. And that's because of the character of the snow that we've been getting in Wisconsin this winter has been much of the more drier, fluffier type of snow, precisely because it's been so cold. And so you may see some very high snow totals this year in a lot of places, but the overall precipitation for the winter may turn out to be pretty close to normal.
Yeah, wow, interesting. Thank you very much, Pat, for sharing those statistics from Ironwood or Hurley. That's really something.
Impressive.
You know, we had a Facebook listener who commented, was this winter predicted? Before the winter started, he seemed to think that it was predicted to be it was going to be a normal winter, and it turned out to not be a normal winter.
Yes, I actually, that's a great question. I would say, no, it wasn't. I think the last time I was on your show, we were talking about the upcoming winter at the time. I was thinking that maybe we'd see above normal snowfall, but the forecast was for about normal above normal precipitation and about normal temperatures for the Great Lakes region. And
so how do we get that one wrong?
Well, actually, one of the toughest things that we have, I mean, modern prediction of weather itself on timescales of several days out to even a few weeks is really a great scientific accomplishment. But when you look at timescales that get longer than that, when you look at seasonal or subseasonal prediction, there's still a lot to be learned and a lot of room for improvement in that. And that's something I think that it's recognized that this was a busted forecast, if you will, for much of the eastern part of the country and certainly the Great Lakes region.
Yeah. Well, we have just a minute before a news break. If I read correctly, are you in Washington, D.C. right now, Professor Morgan?
Yes.
Yeah. Aren't you going to get another snowstorm midweek?
Actually, more rain here. It'll
okay.
Be snow toward north in Pennsylvania and New York State.
Yeah, so you've been, I mean, that part of the state or that part of the country's really been nailed too, it seems.
Right. I would say definitely one of the big things is this winter is probably about 3 or 4 weeks ago. There was one day which I felt like I was back in Wisconsin. We had a temperature of 8 degrees in the morning and with snow cover, and it was pretty cold, but nothing like the my friends and colleagues back in Wisconsin have experienced this winter overall. It's been a pretty cold and snowy winter here.
We are going to check news, and then we will be back talking about our weather. Today's going to be nice, mostly sunny, very mild, with highs statewide near 50 degrees. But unfortunately, it's not going to last. We're talking about the spring that will be and the winter that was. This is the Ideas Network. We will continue to take your weather and climate-related questions for our guest expert on the winter that was and the spring that will be at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And in about 15 minutes, we will have a wake-up call on the potential for spring flooding in Wisconsin. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us on this Monday, March 10th. On this day when temperatures will be in the 40s and near 50 degrees throughout most of Wisconsin, are you longing for this spring weather to stay put? Will you ever forget this past winter? Did you say to yourself, over the winter, why do I live here? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome back our guest, Michael Morgan, Professor of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. He is also Division Director for the Atmospheric and Geospace Sciences at the National Science Foundation. So let's just reset here, Professor Morgan. What is the outlook for this spring? What kind of a spring are we expected to have?
Okay, again, with the caveat that certainly the forecast for this past winter, December, January, February, was off, I'll preface that. But the outlook for the spring is for continued below-normal temperatures for Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. That's a likelihood of below normal temperatures. And for the precipitation outlook for the 3 months, March, April, May, it looks sort of equal chances for above and below normal temperatures. So it's sort of a toss-up as to that. There's no strong signal in the short-term climate prediction for us to be wetter or drier than normal, but that's unclear. But temperature-wise, it looks like we'll stay on the cool side.
Yeah, and we've heard the phrase polar vortex probably way too many times this winter. But is that still playing a factor in our weather right now?
In a way, yes. I mentioned earlier at the beginning of the show that this ridge, this bubble of really warm air over the North Pacific and parts of Alaska, had been diverting the jet stream to the south. And on the periphery of that jet stream, or the periphery of the so-called polar vortex, is the jet. And so with the jet displaced far to the north over parts of the North Pacific and Alaska, that diverts the cold air, this dump of cold air, with a northwest flow over our area. And so we're rather than be on the edge of the polar vortex much of this winter, we've been within the vortex itself, at least the eastern United States, central United States, and parts of Canada. And so that vortex was sort of shifted well south from its normal location, that gave us the, and that was consistent with the cold temperatures that we experienced.
Yeah, we didn't expect that polar vortex to dip so far south, being one of the reasons why the winter forecast might have been off?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Does global warming and or climate change have anything to do with that polar vortex shifting so far to the south?
That I would sort of stick with I guess a similar response to a question of this sort from a while back. I think it's difficult to say at this point what role climate change would have had in the shift of the vortex itself. And I think that's just a that's something that's being hotly studied within the climate community as to the role of climate change on individual weather events or individual periods of weather, you know, short-term climate fluctuations. I mean, one of the really tough things is, it goes back to a questioner asked earlier this during this show, was about the climate record. We don't have an extensively long climate record to make significant comparisons on the variability that we see from year to year, and trying to attribute any of these one season instances of, you know, cold here over the eastern United States but warmer everywhere else globally, or most everywhere else globally, to climate change is going to be really a tricky thing to do. But that's an area of intense research right now.
Yeah. What do you say when someone says to you, though, it's been so cold this winter, that just goes to show that this climate change stuff is all bunk?
I would just go to the NOAA statement for, I think this carried over beyond just January, that this was the fourth warmest January on record and the warmest, for midwinter at least, the fourth warmest January and the warmest since 2007. We were, unfortunately, the Great Lakes region, eastern United States, was in, had a very cold period, but globally the temperatures were above normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so the warming continues.
So here I'm going to ask about if we know anything about summer yet. Do we know anything about where El Nino or La Nina are this year?
Oh, yeah, that's an excellent question. So one of the, El Nino refers to some sea surface temperatures or pattern of sea surface temperatures out in the central Pacific near the equator. And over the last several years, we've really not experienced an El Nino. This phenomenon really affects the entire global circulation. And that we've been in a neutral pattern for the last several years. And now there are some strong indications, that we might be moving toward a warmer phase or an El Nino period. And that can have significant changes to precipitation over the United States and to temperature. It's kind of the odd thing that for El Nino's effect on the upper Midwest, and certainly for the Madison area, is unclear. I mean, the biggest signals that we see over North America are wetter over the southern United States and the western United States, which would be a relief to those drought-plagued areas of California, the southwest United States, and Texas that have not seen much precipitation in the last two or three years. And so there are signals for El Nino beginning to emerge, but one of the cautions is it's a curious aspect of the climate system that predictions of El Nino that occur during the spring for the following, say, fall and winter, are typically not particularly skillful. But a lot of the forecast models that they use, climate prediction models that they use for El Nino, are indicating about a 50% chance, if not greater, switch over to El Nino, which could then have another impact on our climate and weather, but we just have to watch that. But that's something that they're monitoring right now. The temperatures are rising over the Pacific that are consistent with an El Nino beginning to emerge, but it'll be another few months before we can robustly say that it started.
We are talking with Michael Morgan. He is a professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison. We have another 5 minutes or so with Professor Morgan. If you have a question related to our weather or our climate, to our very cold winter, it was a below normal winter, or the outlook for the spring, we welcome it at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let's take another call from Mike in Milwaukee. Hello, Mike.
Hello. I was rather curious as to whether any of the many or any of the 19th century thermometers are still intact. I understand that records are kept in Milwaukee since about the time of General Custer's demise in 1871. And also, I was wondering, I can't recall what decade Fahrenheit introduced this temperature scale.
Yeah. So, just curious, Mike, why do you want to know if those 19th century thermometers are still around?
Well, for one thing, you maybe could have some idea how accurate they are or were.
I see. Any idea, Professor Morgan?
Right. I do not know. I don't believe they're certainly still being used, but I don't know. There might be in some museums, there might be, or science museums, there might be some of those thermometers still available, and presumably if they haven't been damaged, they should still be able to record temperature, but I'm not sure what the state of those thermometers are. Fahrenheit was, scientist, physicist that lived in the 1600s, early 1700s, and he developed that scale back in the, I guess it was proposed around 1724 or so.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about the wind chill factor? Didn't that change in recent years? We had the caller before news time who was talking about so many school closings this year because of the wind chill, the cold. It was below zero in northern Wisconsin. It was below zero without the wind chill, but we had some, minus 45 with the wind chill. Is that different than what it was years ago?
I'm not sure if the definition of wind chill has changed so much, but just having a colder, obviously colder temperatures give you a colder wind chill, obviously, but the big factor is just the intensity of the wind, and if it's been windier than normal, that'll certainly make people feel considerably colder, and we've had all these weather systems, a number of them passing by this winter to our south, and they've been accompanied by some increase in winds, but I don't know if there's been any fundamental change in lower wind chills because of wind increases as opposed to just our being much colder than normal.
Mm-hmm. Steve from Rome reports that he was driving on Highway 13 south of Wisconsin Rapids a week ago today, last Monday, and his car thermometer registered pockets of air as cold as 28 degrees below zero, and says that is the coldest that he has ever seen his thermometer register anyway.
Yeah, that's something it's really interesting. You talk about where do you sight your thermometer can give big influences on the temperatures that you measure. And typically during the evenings, overnight, and early morning hours when the winds have dropped off considerably, you can get these pockets of very cold air in valleys and in very shallow depressions that can be as much as 10 or 15 degrees colder than areas that might be just a few hundred feet away that are elevated because there's a strong stratification, a strong temperature, vertical temperature gradient that exists. And if you have any mixing, any wind, that'll churn things up so the temperatures moderate in those areas. But I think the airport in Madison is in a slight depression there, and that can certainly give unusually cold readings at the airport relative to some areas around it.
John in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, John.
Hi. I wanted to know if wind chill had any effect on water freezing. Say it's 32 degrees with a wind chill of 8 degrees as opposed to just 32 without any wind chill factor whatsoever.
No, the air would freeze. It's going to be dependent on the temperature itself. The wind chill doesn't really have an effect on whether something's going to freeze.
Or just the wind penetrates your clothing when you're walking down the street or something like
right,
that.
Right, the impact on sort of human condition. Right.
So wind chill makes us feel colder, but it doesn't freeze water faster.
No.
Yeah. Let's go to Bill in Manitowoc. Hello, Bill.
We get a heat lightning in the summer. Is it possible to get thunder or lightning in the winter?
Oh, yes, most certainly. In fact, a number of the snowstorms that have affected parts of the country this winter have been associated with thunderstorms and snow. That's not the conditions you want to get are typically very heavy, very deep, very strong vertical motions in the snow-producing clouds that will lead to charge separation that will lead to lightning strikes that occur in the clouds during snowstorms. And so thunderstorms during winter storms are something that are they don't happen a lot, but they're not, I wouldn't call them rare, but when they do happen, they can produce significant precipitation rates in the end.
Well, last week was National Severe Weather Preparedness Week. What severe weather should we be ready for now that spring is almost here?
Well, I think with spring approaching, I mean, the biggest severe concern are the severe thunderstorms and the tornadoes that accompany them. One factor that we'll be watching over the next several months, we talked about El Nino earlier, is that typically during El Nino years, you'll see the threat for severe weather across North America, across the United States, in fact, shifting more towards southern latitudes, a greater propensity there, and maybe a slight decrease, if I understand the statistics correctly, for the upper Midwest. So that's probably a good thing with El Nino's emergence. But obviously, being prepared for severe weather at any time of the year, staying tuned to, you know, your trusted sources of information, the National Weather Service being one of them, for any of these severe weather outbreaks. But I think the forecast for this week, certainly for Wisconsin, isn't for any of that to be occurring. But it's always good to be mindful of it, and particularly as we move into April and May.
Yeah. And before we let you go, just a recap on today. It's going to be lovely, sunny and mild with highs near 50 statewide. But then what for Wisconsin for the rest of the week?
Well, cooler tomorrow, warming up again on Wednesday, and I think a downward trend, a slow downward trend in temperatures to below normal. I earlier stated normal was in the mid-30s. I think it's a little bit higher than that. Maybe it's just about 40. So we'll be slightly below normal as we get toward the end of the week. And then it looks like next week will probably be continued below normal.
And we, when will my May flowers come?
June or July? No, I don't know. It'll be. I think you'll just wait till May. I think May you'll be seeing them, and not, hopefully they won't be emerging from snow. They'll be emerging from a cool ground.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Michael Morgan, professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison. He's also the division director for the atmospheric and geospace sciences at the National Science Foundation. Time for a Monday morning wake-up call coming up after this. It's time now for the Monday Morning Wake-Up Call. This Monday morning segment went on a hiatus for much of the past year, but we are bringing it back because the National Weather Service is warning Wisconsin about the potential of spring flooding. And that's what this segment is all about, something that you should know about, a warning, an alert, a political rumbling. And we find someone who is issuing the wake-up call or to explain the wake-up call to join us for the last few minutes of each hour on Monday mornings at this time. So let's talk about the potential for spring flooding. Our guest is Steve Buin. I hope I got that right. Buin, who is a hydrologist for the National Oceanic Atmospheric Association. Good morning. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
Yes, you did, Joy. Good morning.
Good morning. So what is the potential for spring flooding?
Well, Joy, we got a pretty good potential for spring flooding across Wisconsin this year, and for some folks, that's going to be a relatively new experience considering all the summer and fall floods we've had recently.
Yeah, well, what factors raise the risk for flooding in the spring?
Well, the first factor that raised the risk is last fall we had a normal to above normal fall precipitation before it froze up, so our soil conditions are rather saturated below this snowpack, and then in the winter we had a tremendous snow across the state, as your listeners well know, as they've been shoveling out, with 4 to 6 inches of water sitting on the ground relatively north of a line from, say, Hudson to Green Bay northward, and south of there, 2 to 4 inches. So that's a typical summer month's worth of precipitation.
Yeah. So how bad might the flooding be?
Well, it's certainly, if this snowpack were to come off relatively quickly, say late March, early April, we don't see a significant thaw before that. We're getting these consolidation thaws where we'll see the snowpack go down but not really melt off yet. But if it comes off relatively quickly or with a rain as we turn over to spring, then this is going to come off quickly and we'll see significant flooding, if not severe flooding, especially in the northern half of the state or the rivers that come from the north, the Chippewa, Black, and Wisconsin, bringing all that water down to the south.
Yeah, so can you talk about some of the waterways that will be affected or the communities that could be affected?
Well, we see the highest risk for flooding right now we see is along the Chippewa River, really anywhere along the Chippewa, all the way through Eau Claire, down to the community of Durand especially, along the Wisconsin River. We see Portage as one of the highest risks for flooding in the state, but really anywhere along the Wisconsin River. We see it down in the Fox River, down in the southeast corner. We see a significant risk for flooding there, too. Got a relatively high snow water content, and they've had repeated flooding over the last several years, so there really is no storage available for that water. It's got to all go in the river, and we'll probably see flooding down there, too.
Yeah, so this is something that what we may see this spring is atypical?
There's some minor spring flooding, really, in a lot of places, just from the snow melt, but really, we haven't seen a significant spring flood in quite a while, so I don't think folks are really used to it as much as they maybe were back in the 60s and 70s. So folks really got to be careful. A spring flood is nothing certainly for children to play in. The water is very cold, and again, most flood fatalities occur driving a car, and spring flooding can pose a significant risk for that because of ice jam flooding can be very rapid and unknown, and especially at night, you got to be very careful when this breakup finally comes.
Yeah, so this we're talking about more than a damp basement here, right?
Yeah, I think when you get spring flooding, it tends to flood in places where you're not used to it because drainage ways tend to get clogged with snow and ice, and so therefore water backs up in places you might not expect it, and this could be quite a long duration period here because spring kind of tends to drag out over several weeks.
Yeah, you know, last year we had a real rainy day, and we had a lot of snow cover. You know, we ended up getting flooding in our basement. It wasn't severe, but it was because water was draining off of our neighbor's backyard and pooling by the side of our house, and we had to dig gullies to divert that water away from the side of our house. What might people do to prepare for possible spring flooding?
Well, that's a very important point here. You may see spring flooding on your roof first. You got to make sure that water can drain off your roof, and then you got to make sure it can get away from your property. So you may have to get out and clear a path for it. With this extensive snowpack we've got, really statewide, that water is not going to be able to get to places it normally can get. And then in urban communities, we could see flooding first because the curbs and gutters and the storm drains are probably clogged with ice too. So we need to get those cleaned out. So that's the first step. And then it's to prepare. If you live along the rivers and you periodically do see flooding, you need to make sure you've got sandbags that are ready to go. You can protect your property or get property out of the way. If you didn't get your dock moved out of the way, things like that. Get things out of the way so that the floodwaters won't carry it away.
Yeah. We have less than 30 seconds. Today, sunny and in the 50s statewide. Could we see flooding already today?
Certainly in urban areas here. I'm in the Twin Cities, and we saw some road flooding yesterday with highs in the upper 40s. The water just can't get into those drainage ways right now. So it kind of will start, but again, we're going to get cool, so we'll probably put this off for a few more weeks, the serious flooding.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, Joy. My pleasure.
Steve Bouyen is a hydrologist for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, issuing today's Monday morning wake-up call on the potential for severe flooding in Wisconsin this year with the spring thaw. Thanks very much to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.